This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 67. Today, we're going to catch up on some cloud news and then an interview with Arpan Shah from Microsoft, recorded live Friday, February the 13th, 2015. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Hey, CJ, how's it going today?
Good, mate. How are you?
Doing good. This has been a bit of a hectic week for the two of us. It was a little tough getting together to make sure we could get an episode in, huh?
Oh, man. Yeah, life gets in the way sometimes, too.
I was at a conference all week, and you were you had a bunch of work stuff going on. So we able to manage finally get together, though, on this a Friday afternoon here, Friday the 13th of February.
Is that a bad omen?
I don't know. Well, I mean, we'll see, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see how this goes. But yeah, I'm glad we figured it out.
Yeah, definitely. So how's it been lately?
Oh man, work's been crazy this week. Crazy. I've been running around like a madman with my head cut off. But pretty good, you know, all things considered, pretty good.
Good.
How about you? You've been traveling, huh?
Yeah, this week was a busy week. I was in Austin, Texas for the SP TechCon conference. I gave a full-day workshop on kind of getting people up to speed on the modern world of Office 365 development and SharePoint Online development, where, I mean, it was starting off the very basics with, this is what we call a farm. This is what on-prem means. This is what the cloud means and all that stuff. And we did solutions and apps and had a really good discussion. And it's funny because that little thing, we don't start talking about apps until the afternoon, and you always kind of run up on app security and identity is one of the last things we kind of get to. And this one, we had about 15 minutes remaining and we still hadn't gotten to the app security stuff and everything. So I look at everybody, I'm like, how about I just give you guys a bunch of resources? And like one guy's like, no, go ahead and just give us the fastest 15 minute brain dump of app security and identity and OAuth and everything. I'm like, I'm going to confuse the hell out of you if I only have 15 minutes to do that.
Here we go.
I don't have my elevator pitch too good, but
oh, it sounds like it was a fun conference, though.
Yeah, it was a really good show. It's one of my favorite conferences. They do a really good job. Of all the conferences I go to, I feel that I get the most like rich interaction with attendees. They're very vocal. Very engaging. Really good thought processes going on and stuff. Really good discussion. So it's a really good show. And then I'm really, really looking forward to doing the, they have one coming up that I believe that you're the keynote for up in June.
Yeah, the new one.
They call it Dev Days.
Yeah. So there's, so I'm signed up to do that. I've been meaning to come to one of their shows for a while, actually. And so this one looks like it's going to work out, and we got it all signed up. So that's awesome.
It's going to be good. I think that with the merging of all the Microsoft conferences to Ignite, that's going to be in May, no longer having a SharePoint conference, I think that, you know, this is going to be a really good opportunity because I think that developers kind of feel a little bit like, where do I go to have a lot of developer content? I mean, you've got, you know, Ignite's going to have obviously some developer content, but that's not, at least for me, that's not the focus of Ignite. Ignite's more of a, you know, from the numbers that I've heard published and everything, you've got, you know, 15% are developers is the numbers they're telling the vendors and stuff. So, and then you've got Build, but then it's only a certain number of people can get into Build because it's every technology piece for Microsoft, mostly platform for Windows, and everybody goes, you know, sells out within an hour. So this is going to be a good option, I think, for developers that are looking for 365 and SharePoint content. I know that Dave is one of the organizers, and they're looking to do two tracks, an Office 365 track and a SharePoint track, and they're capping the number of people that'll be there. So
yeah,
I'm really looking forward to that one.
No, it's going to be, like you said, it's going to be a really good choice for those people who just want dev content and just want it on SharePoint and Office 365 stuff, which I'm looking forward to. I think it'd be really cool to get all that audience in one place at the same time. And so it's nice. Yeah. I mean, if you're looking for more products or you wouldn't consider yourself a developer and other things, there's loads of other choices, but this one's shaping up to be pretty cool for devs in that space. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
I agree. It's going to be fun, but yeah. So, hey, why don't we dive into a little bit of the news stuff that's going on lately? I guess the first one is sticking close to the SharePoint Office 365-y side is a blog post that came out on January the 31st. It's funny because it seemed pretty obvious to me, but it was a major confusion to a lot of people at least at the conference this past week, I had somebody going toe to toe with me in one of the sessions that was convinced that what I was saying was wrong. But there's a blog post on blogs.office.com. It's titled "The Update on InfoPath and SharePoint Forms," and allow me to summarize, and I'll let you kind of add your any color commentary you want to add. But essentially, Microsoft has said that, you know, in the past we know that there would not be another version of InfoPath going forward, and there'd be a new form story. And there have been different things that have been kind of tossed around, and some of them have been kind of tabled, or some of them have been kind of delayed, or whatever, however you want to call it. But for the most part, what this basically says is it just reaffirms that, you know, Microsoft is, the plan has not effectively really changed as far as InfoPath is concerned. But with the on-prem announcement, or the fact that there will be a reaffirmation, I should say, of another on-prem version coming later this year, they have simply said that InfoPath will be part of that release, or at least will work with that release, and it will be supported going forward from there. So I guess, you know, this may be an unfair way to say it, but let's just say the ball is getting punted downfield a little bit more with the 2016 release.
Yeah, I think where the confusion's coming from is in the terms that are being used, right? So if you just say InfoPath, it's probably not enough to be completely accurate, right? So when I say InfoPath, I mean that application that you use to build and fill in forms, that it's a desktop application. And the bit that we've said is going to continue in SharePoint on-prem in the next release and continue in Office 365 is InfoPath Form Services, which is the server-side component that renders forms in a browser. So we've not changed the story. We haven't changed our stance on the InfoPath client application. There won't be another version of that. But InfoPath Form Services is the server component. And the thing that we have changed our stance on is the inclusion of that in SharePoint Server 2016 and how long it will live on in Office 365. So that's important because say we released SharePoint 2016 without InfoPath Form Services in it, then everybody that's on 2013 who's put loads of effort into their InfoPath forms and uses them either for workflows or just for information capture of some description, then they wouldn't be able to upgrade to 2016 because, you know, what would they do with their forms? So we felt like given we weren't going to have a solid new offering that they could move to, that instead the only right thing to do would be to continue IPFS in on-prem and in the cloud so that we didn't stop people in their tracks from being able to upgrade.
IPFS being InfoPath Form Services.
Yes, sorry, InfoPath Form Services, yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to build forms using InfoPath 2013 and modify your forms and update them and all of that, and they'll still run on-prem and they'll still run in the cloud. It all sort of came about because, you know, originally when we talked about this at SharePoint conference last year in March, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. We'd said that it was going to be the last version of InfoPath client and that InfoPath Form Services was going to be removed from the next release. It wouldn't ship in the next release. But we thought we were going to have a good, solid replacement for it, or a tool that you could use to build forms and do many of the same scenarios. But for a variety of reasons, that's not transpired. And so we needed to say to customers, you're okay to continue using InfoPath Form Services. You can still build forms if you want. Your existing forms will continue to run, and you don't have to worry about it when, you know, come SharePoint 2016, you won't be stuck. So that was our reasoning.
When I was trading a few emails on this with someone from Microsoft, I said, so let me just get this straight. So what you're saying is that we're not just running up to the line and throwing the ball. We're actually going to call a timeout, regroup, look at the personnel, and then run it right up the middle. But I thought that might have been too soon since the Super Bowl to use that analogy.
Dude, you know how... Oh, I'm going to start crying if you start talking about the Super Bowl, buddy. Yes, that was a painful loss. But unfortunately, it was all our fault. But anyway, the Super Bowl, I mean.
Well, and InfoPath.
I think that, you know, although you'd probably say a little more harshly than I would, I think that's pretty fair to say. Like, we know people want solutions for this problem. The one that we were working on, we made the call that it wasn't going to meet the needs and be enough. And so we decided to say, we're not going to ship it for now. and we're going to continue working on this problem.
Yeah, it's, I would not be harsher, because that's on, there was a thread that I was on where a couple of people have been kind of close to the forms story. And I know that there were some people who were very disappointed and expressed a little bit of frustration. But me personally, I was like, I think this is good, because it's better to rush something out or to put something out that it may not align with the market, but it's better to take your time and make sure that you've got the right thing and you feel good about what you're going to ship and you're going to put it out there. And so, I mean, that's not easy to do that. So
at Microsoft, we've got this term called breaking yourself into jail. I don't know if it's used anywhere else.
No, yeah.
I'm only familiar with it from working here, but it felt like if we released it in its current form, it would have been useful for a certain number of scenarios, right? But it didn't address what we really wanted out of it. And so we didn't want to break ourselves into jail by releasing something that wasn't going to meet everybody's, or at least of a high enough bar to meet enough needs. And then we'll be stuck with InfoPath and stuck with this thing, and then have to keep pushing forward and iterating as fast as we can. And we just didn't know what problems we were going to cause ourselves by doing that. So
yeah, well, it's all good. Well, cool. So, hey, we got a little bit of other news here. I know one that's, I guess the rest of them are all kind of Azure related news things. So one of them is a blog post that we wanted to highlight here. It's by a guy named Ben Stegging. And what the title of it is Disk Performance in Azure. And so the idea is that he went through and did a bunch of tests and wrote up a huge blog post with a ton of data in it about using Azure virtual machines, the different size disks that you can get. And it's reading through the article, I mentioned this, I think, actually on a previous show, where he was debating about how he was going to, you know, push this thing out. And I was like, let's just get this thing out here. I think this is a fantastic piece of work here. I know Ben locally in Jacksonville, he runs the SharePoint user group, or one of the people that runs the SharePoint user group. And there's some interesting things that he saw here, where there's like almost a cap in performance when you have like 64K blocks compared to 8K blocks.
Hmm.
When you start looking at some of the graphs and stuff, it's like, wow, that's interesting. So a couple conclusions that he came to was that without using the premium disks that you have as options in Azure, you're never going to reach the speeds in Azure that you can with the current reach for on-premises or with local VMs running SSDs. But this is the one thing he said. He said that, I'm surprised to see the IOPS and megabytes per second both drop off when using 64K block sizes on the disks. It would appear that it is some sort of limit that is being hit. Since I know IOPS would go up to 8,000 with an 8K block size, there may be some sort of megabit per second ceiling that I'm encountering, maybe around 300 megabits per second. So it's interesting. He went through and he tested out a bunch of different VMs. He tested out A4s, which is a standard, D3s, G2s. He even priced out what he called the arm and a leg per hour VM, which is the G5 at about 965 an hour, 32 cores, 450 gigs of RAM, and 6 terabytes of temp storage. So I think it was probably the most impressive thing about it, aside from all the data, is he actually didn't blow his monthly quota.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
It's a nice set of testing, you know, and I don't know what is causing him to see that drop off. Be interesting to see if we could, you know, maybe get Kirk Evans or somebody like that on the case to take a look at it and get some input on what he might be encountering there. So he was saying that without premium storage, he was seeing this, or was this with premium storage?
I believe he was not using premium storage, because at the time he had not been accepted into the preview, because premium storage is not in GA yet.
Got it.
It's still in preview. And so when he ran the test, he wasn't in preview yet, and the premium program yet. And just keeping in mind that the regular program that you get, what's currently available is you get the disk can do up to 500 IOPS, or you can get the bigger VMs with the temp SSD drives.
Yeah.
The premium one goes up to 50,000 IOPS, which is not just the SSDs, the temp storage. That's like the durable storage. So that's the part that he had not tested. He hadn't tested against those yet.
Interesting. Cool. Oh, this is really sweet though. Like, it'll be interesting to see him continue these tests and keep adding to his analysis. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so we'll put notes, I mean, again, just like all the other posts that we do, we'll put the links in the show notes.
Yeah, nice. Hey, we've got another one. Speaking of Azure and performance stuff, we've got another one about the Super Bowl. So Microsoft, we'll link off to a blog post from the Azure team. It says, the title of it is called Microsoft Azure Supports NBC Sports Digital's Record-Breaking Live Event with SuperStream Sunday. Now, I just to give a little bit of color to this, I was driving back from Whistler, where I was skiing the weekend of the Super Bowl. And I was driving back on the Sunday, and we thought we were going to be able to leave in time to get back home by the Super Bowl. But it turns out probably, I don't know, 10 minutes after I hit the US border, heading south, is when the Super Bowl started. And so, of course, there's a SUV full of guys, and we're all desperate to watch the Super Bowl. So I whip out my phone, turn on tethering, open my buddy's laptop, and we crack open NBC to see what our streaming options are. And none of us knew this, but NBC was doing live free streaming for the US, I believe. I don't know about internationally, but certainly in the US, I think for the first time in Super Bowl history. So you could go on an NBC Sports website and stream the Super Bowl. And so I thought, oh, this is going to be a little shifty over the AT&T network. But I fired it up and boom, full screen, HD, Super Bowl streamed over the internet, through my phone, over Wi-Fi tethering to my laptop, and then watching the Super Bowl in this car on the way south. And it worked amazingly well. Like, I was stunned. I was not expecting that, mostly because we were in a moving car at 60 miles an hour. And it did stutter from time to time, and I suspect that's when we were switching towers, potentially, with cell network. I don't really know how that stuff works, but it was pretty amazing. Anyway, so there's a post up on the Azure blog about how they did it, and it says things like they had 800,000 average viewers per minute.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's huge.
Incredible, eh? And they had 2.5 million unique users.
Good gracious.
And a peak usage of 1.3 million concurrent. That's just like, especially when you're streaming like HD streams to that many people, that is a boatload of bandwidth.
yeah, that's pretty impressive too. And the whole thing was backed by Azure.
Yeah, and then they talk about a whole lot of media acronyms I don't really understand. But in effect, it's the Azure Media Services were being, the streams directly from NBC, I imagine, were being ingested both on the East and the West Coast in the States. Then there was some media packaging and formatting stuff, and then flicked out for multiple streams on iOS, Android, and Windows devices. I was like, bang, go technology.
So now Azure Media Services has streamed both the the 2014 Olympic Winter Games and the 2014-15 Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Those are some big wins, I'd say.
And then they throw out a point right at the end here. It says, while streaming this channel to over 800,000 average viewers per second, actually, that's weird. They say 800 viewers per minute and then per second. Anyway, we leveraged under 10% of provisioned capacity. So either somebody didn't do a good enough advertising job of telling people they could do this, or Azure performed really, really well above what they thought it would, or they just like, screw it, we're just going to throw everything at this because we don't want it to break.
Yeah. Everybody's watching. We don't want to screw this one
up. Yeah,
You didn't want to have a, what is it, from the halftime show a few years ago, we didn't want to have a nip slip.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't want to have a bit slip.
Yeah, either a bit slip or an Azure malfunction. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
So I benefited from this in a car at 60 miles an hour and thought it was just amazing use of technology. And maybe I'm getting old and thinking that's amazing, but I thought it was badass. So, yeah.
I'm right there with you. I think it is very cool that they did that. So
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see like people using this for broadcasting conferences and stuff, you know, for doing streaming out on the net.
I would like to see more events get streamed this way. I know that, you know, that there's not many companies out there that do this kind of massive streaming to a massive audience and stuff. And so it's, you know, we've seen some epic failures with like the Apple keynote for the watch had the epic failure last year.
Oh yeah.
So it's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. It's great when it works really well, and it's infuriating if it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Azure Media Services.
Okay. So cool. So we just went through a bunch of news here. So why don't we kind of pivot a bit? And I've got an interview that I'd like to play. So basically what I did over this last week when I was at the SharePoint or the SP TechCon conference in Austin, the keynote speaker, Arpan Shah, who we both know very well, is at in the Office 365 team on the marketing side for Microsoft. He was the keynote speaker, and I was able to kind of hijack him for about 20 minutes between his various meetings and presentation that he had to do that day, with just a short 24 hours being in Austin. So we sat down, we talked about a lot of different things, and I think it's an interesting discussion. Don't expect any kind of like, I didn't try and pull any future like features that are coming out or any kind of specific usage numbers or pricing or dollar amounts or any of that kind of stuff, because it's just not stuff that I know that Microsoft doesn't, if they don't say it in the quarterly financial calls, it's not something we wanted to do in the interview. So, but I tried to ask some different questions, some interesting questions here. I think it's a good discussion.
Nice. Yeah. I think Arpan had a great time down at the conference. So I'm glad you managed to catch up and, you know, noodle on a few things with him.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and roll this interview now. All right. So this is Andrew. I'm sitting here today with Arpan Shah. Arpan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing good. We go back a long way.
We do. We do.
I think it was TechEd 2005 when I first got a chance to meet you, and it was back in the content management server days.
I think it was TechEd EMEA.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, Andrew, you want to come out on stage and talk about, I think, CMS or SharePoint?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, we did something, a Spark Connector, I think is what it was.
That's like, right.
Old school.
That is right.
So for our listeners who aren't familiar with you, what do you do today? What's your role today with Microsoft?
Yeah, so I lead product management for Office 365.
Okay.
And as you guys just listened to, I have a deep history with web technologies, with CMS, as well as SharePoint.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when I have time, I try to meet as many customers and partners as I can.
Gotcha. So I was able to grab a few minutes of your time today. Again, thanks for, I know you got a busy schedule. You're kind of in and out and doing did the keynote here at the SP TechCon conference here in Austin, early February of 2015. Really good keynote, really good turnout for the keynote too. You had a lot of people there this morning.
Yeah, almost 1,000 people.
That was really good.
It was good, yeah.
It was really good. You guys, I saw you got a bunch of really cool demos. You talked a lot about Delve. You talked a lot about the video portal, the attachments and email demo. That's always one that's like, that's like a low-hanging fruit demo that you show everybody.
Absolutely.
And they're like, oh, this is awesome.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and then some other stuff too that I noticed too, that when you, in the demo that you give it a year or two back, you never would have seen a Microsoft presenter, especially someone at your level, having an Android tablet up on stage and showing that, or talking about iOS, or talking about Apple. I mean, that's really, it's really a different company these days.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe just a few days ago was the first year anniversary of Satya Nadella.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, the entire company's energized.
Yeah.
And you know, mobile first, cloud first isn't just a mantra he talks about.
Yeah.
People are changing the way they think. They're releasing amazing software across platform. And I think in many ways, Office is right there in the front of a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? We're productivity, we're cloud. So it maps really well with Satya's vision.
And what, I mean, he said, I think I saw a quote from him a couple months ago or something where he said like the most, something like the Office APIs was like the most competitive advantage or something.
Office 365 is the most strategic API.
So strategic API, that's right.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. That's huge for you guys too. That's good.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's cool to see all the changes, and it's cool to see all the improvements and progress that's made over 365 recently too. So yeah, so I want to come back to the Satya point in a little bit, but I have a couple questions for you, and this is, we're not going to try and pry any kind of like talk about numbers or talk about futures and stuff. I know everybody always wants to try and grab your time and try and get that stuff. And, you know, I know this is not the time or the place to kind of do those kinds of things. So I had a couple questions though about like Office 365, specifically around the business around it, and just like you have some insight and that our listeners have been asking for. So what do you think like of, since Office 365 has really started to gain adoption over the last few years, what has been probably like one of the biggest surprises to you that you didn't anticipate, or that has been a pleasant surprise or something?
Well, you know, it's been how receptive people are to think about cloud, which is pleasant. Like, people get it.
Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, I think there was a lot of trepidation of, oh, I don't know if they're going to have the features they have on-prem. I'm not sure if it's going to have as much value for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what's been an amazing surprise is I think people get that that's where innovation happens.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to innovate faster. It allows us to deliver value in a faster pace than we traditionally could on-prem, right? The 2 to 3 year life cycle.
Right.
So that's been great. On the side that I would say is less on the positive side are the things that are out of control, out of those folks' control. So the same people that are excited still have to deal with, you know, like their legal department, they have to deal with security departments, they have to deal with all these other things that, you know, might make their journey to the cloud a little slower.
Right.
And, you know, we're working on both those angles, innovation and security. Mm-hmm. So, those are the two things. I don't know if they're surprises, but it's good to see some changes happen.
It seemed when we first started talking about 365, I know, like you said, there was a lot of trepidation. It's a nice way to say it. A lot of people were, you know, is this right for me? Or, right. You know, do I have to go to the cloud and stuff? And you could see that the message has been a lot more of, you know, come to the cloud when you're ready and
right.
at the pieces that you want.
Right.
And that's all the investments you talked about today, all the investments you guys are making around the hybrid space.
Yeah, and the saying that we like to say these days is people that are on-prem and can't move that quickly, instead of saying we're going to bring them to the cloud, we've been saying we'll bring the cloud to you.
Right, right.
And that really speaks to hybrid. And I think it also signals a shift in terms of we're not going to try to bring everyone at one time. I mean, we've already said very clearly we're going to ship on-prem software,
mm-hmm.
like SharePoint 2016 coming out later this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing a lot of great stuff in the cloud to bring kind of those innovation capabilities to those customers
right.
who just can't move yet
right.
for other reasons.
I heard you say the comment today, it was really good about how on the hybrid space that you want to be able, the best hybrid solution, or the best deployment is where the users don't know
right.
where they are.
Yeah.
They don't
yeah.
know where their data is, they don't know yeah. where they're working, but they don't, in a sense, they don't care. IT knows where it is,
right.
and they feel comfortable where everything is, and the security and around the regulatory
right.
stuff. But and you made another good point too. I was so happy to hear you say it too, is that a lot of people say about, you know, I can't do this or I can't do that, and Microsoft has to fix this, or they even look at the competitors too, or Amazon's got to fix this problem or whatever. And it's like the majority of the cloud problems, so many of the cloud problems or challenges, I should say, that we face today is not technology related. It's more like government or regulatory related, that those things haven't caught up with where the technology is today.
Right.
And we're trying to find what it works in the boundary of those
yeah.
rules and those regulations.
Yeah, I'll give you all, you know, the example I like to share, and there's a lot of work we're doing here, so, but the thing I keep hearing from customers is people who, and I think I talked about like, you know, climbing a mountain versus marathon running.
Right.
People who are used to doing app compat, that mm-hmm. comes up a lot. Like, oh boy, I used to do app compat.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time I do an app, every time the version changes, I gotta test everything.
Yep.
And that made a lot of sense when you had 2 to 3 years and you had a lot of change and
yep.
you had time to plan for those things. But in a world that's changing a lot,
yeah.
those methodologies don't necessarily work.
No, they don't.
So yeah. we're trying to do all we can to communicate, give features in advance, but also means that customers also have to work with us on changing the way they test software as well.
It does. It's a collaborative experience. And I mean, I think it's a better experience too for the customer. It's a better experience for a vendor like Microsoft,
right.
and it's also a better experience for the customer because when changes happen, they're not these massive
right.
changes like, hey, here's the ribbon, or
right.
these things that you need training and stuff
yep.
on. It's now, let's say, here's a new product or a new feature that we can take advantage of. And maybe you get up to speed on that, but you don't feel like this huge change that just happened,
right.
that it's a real disruption to what
right.
you're doing. So it's got to be a little bit easier of a sell, too, for some customers, and just being like, look, you got this new thing. You mentioned on-prem a second ago. You know, it's funny because when, you know, there's all the news about we're going to 365, and I guess in calendar year 2014, there was a lot of questions, would there be another on-prem? And Mike, in the last few weeks, Microsoft reaffirmed that there was going to be another on-prem 2016 later this year. I'm sure we'll see more about it at the Ignite conference in Chicago
That's
later
right.
in May. But do you get the sense that there is, not that there's no interest, but that the interest or the feeling of, oh my God, we have to have another on-prem, does it feel like that tone has kind of come down a bit because 365 is so much more accepted by so many more customers? There's still a need for on-prem for a lot of organizations, but to me, the noise about it from customers, the demand for it, I guess what I'm trying to say is when the message came out a couple days ago that, hey, here's another on-prem, we've already said it, but we're reaffirming it, it wasn't met with this, oh, thank God, by all the customers. It was kind of like, seems like a good trend.
You know, it's absolutely a great trend, but when I think about major shifts in mm-hmm. technology, right,
mm-hmm.
let's say consumer tech,
mm-hmm.
when smartphones started coming out, there was some apprehension, or when people started doing online banking,
mm-hmm.
there's a little bit of, oh, can I buy stuff online? Like
right.
my credit cards, right?
Is it safe? Yeah.
Or online banking, pick your industry.
Right.
Whenever you have something that is disrupting people, they think, because it challenges the way they did things, it challenges the processes, it challenges everything around them.
Mm-hmm.
that may not move as fast, right? And you alluded before around litigation, around global policies. Those things are still a little behind, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a different challenge.
Right.
But I think as things catch up, as we as human beings catch up, as things around us catch up, we get more comfortable. Yep. So when you look at all the examples I said, online banking, I remember people like, oh, online banking will never happen. Oh, credit card, can you imagine that? And it's not to say it's all perfect.
Right.
But we've evolved and now we know how to deal with things.
Right.
Smartphones, another example. I think cloud is like that as well. I think, you know, like it's been a few years and every few months I see change. It comes back to the point I said earlier where there are some lagging things that have that are out of the IT's control,
right?
Like that security stuff that they still get questions on, or data sovereignty is another one that comes up. So that's not in the control, but things are in the control. They're all for the business.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to think of practical ways to move there. Mm-hmm. So short answer, I guess I gave you a long answer.
No, that's
but
good.
To make a long story short, I think it's what we're seeing is representative of any big change.
Yeah.
But I'm also glad that people know we are shipping on-prem.
Right.
Because on-prem is stability. On-prem is, hey, that's where people might be. Mm-hmm. By stability, I didn't mean like service stability. I meant like stability, like cultural stability.
Yeah.
And the second point, I think it came out really loud and clear, is not only will we ship on-prem, but we'll also look at hybrid as a way to bring that innovation back to customers.
Right.
And I think those two points, I think, made people feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
But you're right, I think things are shifting.
And it seems to also be, I mean, shipping another on-prem version also does give you guys a really good platform to be able to, you know, have a better hooks in for hybrid-based scenarios,
right,
to where you can update
right.
things and have them be not so much where we have to, like, how do I make this work with the cloud? It's more that the cloud is ready, we can give you a new version that's even more friendly
right.
to that market.
Absolutely.
What are you like the most excited about? You know, looking forward in 365, like where are we going in the next year, something like that? What's on your radar right now?
So three things off the top of my head. None of them sound terribly sexy, but this is what excites me. So it tells you something about me. First is, I really want customers to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Like deployment,
mm-hmm.
right? Like there are some really great features out there. We've shipped over 150 features in the last 12 to 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think 365 lacks features. In fact, mobile stuff is coming out every week. We're blogging about it.
Mm-hmm.
I would love customers to take advantage of this value and really take this innovation and translate to their business value. And anything I can do or Microsoft can do or you can do, like all of us can do to help people realize the value is what excites me. I think that's one. The more geeky part of me, the tech enthusiast in me, is really excited about the Office Graph.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Man, Delve is great, but imagine like being able to plug in other data, it magically showing up, third-party applications.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I just can't wait for people to think of really cool, innovative things, because that layer is just going to be absolutely fascinating. So that's one. And the third one is the things I don't know that are coming.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. 6 to 12 months is a long time.
It's a very long time,
In the cloud, we're going to learn stuff. We're going to learn what people are doing. We're going to make adjustments. We're going to look at our signals. We're going to hear from customers. We're going to learn from Ignite. I'm learning here at this conference. And there are things that are in the pipe that I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beautiful thing about 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
You can be innovative. You can try things.
Yeah.
And you're seeing that not only in 365, but even at the company level, you're seeing garage apps come out.
Yeah.
And really Microsoft trying different innovative things, not worried about, we may not get a few things right.
Right.
But we're trying a few things. So
well,
it's awesome.
Easier to test too. It's easier to test and get feedback on new features and stuff a lot faster.
Yep.
Maybe they don't make sense. Maybe they need to be reimagined. Maybe they need to sit there and be refined or something. But you can get like, you can do more like the A-B kind of testing and stuff and get that kind of information from those people.
A-B testing, also big data. Like, this is big data.
Yeah.
You have so many engaged users. So through their actions and making sure we understand what's adding the most value, we can make tweaks or, like you said, completely redesign.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I got two more questions for you.
Yep.
Because I know you got to run in just a minute. We got a meeting, so I'll make sure I don't keep you too long here. So you talked about how like getting telemetry data and getting information back from your customers and finding out like what they want, what they need and stuff. And I know in the past with like on-prem, it was always like, you know, product advisory councils and getting certain vendors come in and talking to people at conferences and stuff. But now you're in the business of hosting SharePoint, or you're in the business of hosting Office 365, which is bigger than just SharePoint. And so you've got a lot of telemetry data. I see you push people to like user voice to say, what do you want? What do you want changed? What do you not like? And then you go show to conferences and stuff, where do you guys get like your direction on what the next thing is? Right. I'm sure there's some things too where you're like, we want to do this that nobody's asked for, but we are thinking ahead. So where do you get these different things?
So there are three high-level pivots or channels, right? One is data, and it's data from the service. I mentioned big data before. One is from support. So these are, I would say, data signals. Like we're learning how people are doing, where they're succeeding, where they're failing. Second is customer voice. So that's these interactions I'm having here. That's Ignite, that's customer advisory councils, that's all those types of traditional programs where that's still really important because hearing people describe, having them react to things is different from reacting to things that I've already shipped.
Right.
Right? I can show you something and you can react or you can experiment, and it's both. You need both.
Right.
And the third thing is innovation. It's the idea that we may not know if it works or not. It may not have come from support. It may not have come from these customer engagements, but it's an idea.
It sounds like an office graph or like a Delve kind of a thing.
Right.
Right.
And it may work, it may not work. And the beautiful thing about our agility is we're able to try things.
Right.
And it comes back to the point I made earlier, which is we don't have to wait for 4 years. Because by the time you test an idea for 4 years, that idea is old.
Yeah, it's very old. Yeah.
So that velocity in cloud enables us to ship things along those three dimensions in a very, in a way that's balanced. And some teams make certain trade-offs depending on where they are in that spectrum.
Right.
You know, mature workloads may be like, hey, you know what? I can innovate a little bit more. Ones that are a little more, like they're out of the gate and they're just trying to get things even better based on feedback, they might be somewhere else.
Right, right.
So there's a lot of agility and flexibility throughout 365 to make those decisions at the core feature level.
Cool, very cool. Okay, I have one last question for you here. This is more of one that I've always been wondering. It's around with Satya taking over the company, taking over as CEO. I know a lot of the things have changed with, especially on the Office 365 side. I mean, I've seen, 2 years ago, I would have staked my life savings that I would not be seeing so much Android, iOS, cross-platform stuff, using Google platforms like Angular and stuff. Talking about those in the office, in the context of Office 365, reaching across, I know a lot of these things have been in the works for a while. I mean, I'm not naive enough to say that Office for the iPad was started being built about a year ago and was shipped in like 3 or 4 months when Satya took the helm. So what has the change been like since he took over? Because you can definitely see a shift in the company from the public side, from the closeness that I have with a lot of people at Microsoft. I can see a cultural shift that's changed. But what's been your observation, your feeling personally from all that?
Yeah, so a couple things. First is I'm the biggest fan of Satya. One of the biggest fans. So
then I'm right behind you then.
So that aside, what I love about Satya's style is his transparency and leadership. What Satya says externally is what he says internally. Mm. Cloud first, mobile first. Mm-hmm. Those are deliberate choices of words. Mm-hmm. Being a productivity company, that's very deliberate. And it's very clear. You know, there's no, we're going to do everything.
Yeah.
He's being very clear about our mission. And that is fantastic because I think people are hearing it and we're getting good feedback from it. But the second one is he's saying the same things internally. And I think the biggest change that he's brought, and it's just great to see, is a cultural change within Microsoft.
Yeah.
He's empowering people, challenging people to think differently, to bring the best experiences where customers are in the realm of productivity. And you find, I mean, whether it's a hackathon or whether it's how people ship software, whether it's how they react or innovate, you see it everywhere. Mm. It's not just a few people that think this and they're going to go do it.
Yeah.
The CEO of the company is saying this to shareholders, to the press, and internally. So anytime someone wants to do something, you know, I've said to myself, like, hey, Satya said we got to go.
Yeah.
And just got to go.
Just do it.
So it's cultural.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you know, I think there are a lot of people at Microsoft that were like this before Satya. So to your point, it's not like it happened overnight.
Yeah.
But he unlocked it so that the whole company is moving and synergizing. And I don't know if I just made that word up, but but is energized.
Yeah.
There's a lot of synergy on how we're all approaching one single goal in different ways. So
yeah.
I don't know if I answered your question.
But no, you did. You did. There's things have changed. There's a lot of energy to it, and it's very surprising. It's very impressive. It's fun. It's a lot of fun to watch.
It's fantastic. It's fun to watch. It's fun to be at Microsoft. Love. But I'll say most honestly, like he also is telling us, and that this is my interpretation, that we should obsess about customers.
Yeah.
And I've always been customer obsessed, as you know.
Yeah.
And the fact that everyone is kind of getting in this mode, and like I said, most people were, but hearing it from the CEO is just fantastic.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I know this happened a while ago. I know there was an article that this is not something I ever would have expected, and I know it's a little bit of a quip kind of an article that someone wrote, but you know, after all the HoloLens stuff came out, and then all just backing up to all the other news, and the guy was backing up stuff about from Office for iPad and the iOS improvements that have been done recently and Windows 10 and all that stuff. Guy wrote an article for, I think it was Gizmodo or Engadget, and just said, you know, when did Apple become the boring one? I mean, that to me, that says a lot for, I know it's a quip kind of an article, yeah. But it's still, it shows a lot of the work that you guys have done over the last year, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, and for a couple of reasons, but one of them was a point I forgot to say, and this is a good proof of that point I said about signaling externally.
Mm-hmm.
Satya once openly is collaborating with partners. I get this, Arpan, really? Salesforce? You guys are working with Salesforce?
Yeah.
With Dropbox? Absolutely. We've always said we're open. We've always said we're extensible. And I mean, SharePoint, that's been our message for a long time.
Right.
But again, to have it at that CXO level and have that those type of connections, whether it's with the CXOs or with the Valley, I think people are not just hearing it, but seeing it. And that innovation coming very quickly.
Yes.
Like Salesforce innovation coming quickly, Dropbox coming quickly.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of other examples.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean we won't keep doing stuff internally. There's a lot of great work we're doing at CRM, but it just means that we're just being very open.
Yeah.
About how we go.
Go to where customers are using their stuff. You want to be part of that story with them and be able to provide value to them.
Right.
Awesome. Hey man, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to sit down with me. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.